This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, director Ari Paulson, has an amazing new movie called Chum Scrubber, which I saw at the Sundance Film Festival, and it's a hard movie to get out of your mind. Ari, thanks for doing the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell the audience what the movie's about. I mean, it contains multitudes, but sort of give them a sort of a thumbnail picture.
I think the strongest thing about it is the depiction of suburbia, you know, this life in a place that seems perfect on the outside. And yet underneath bubbles with all the same stuff that exists everywhere else. And then also sort of hand in hand with that is the idea of the disconnect between parents and teenagers and the way that, especially in a place like suburbia, they kind of live in two separate worlds, with the parents thinking that they're living in paradise and the kids sometimes it seems like the opposite.
And the world are incredibly sort of exclusionary, but there's suicide. Mm. And that really is sort of is a catalyst for the picture. Basically, we sort of start off with the repercussions of that.
Yeah, exactly. And then the movie basically tracks the main character, Dean, played by Jamie Bell, as he kind of wrestles with the consequences of that initial suicide and also kind of trying to find a path through this world that isn't exclusively about numbing himself to it.
I want to talk a little bit because there are so many shifts in tone in that opening scene. And if you can talk about that a little bit, because it really does a lot. And it looks like it was an incredibly complicated thing to do, just sort of moving through the house.
That scene was really, for me, sort of the key into the movie and the key to the casting as well, because, you know, the main character, Dean, has just found his friend hanging. And the way the scene is set up, there's a party going on that the boy's mother is throwing for the neighborhood, sort of a Sunday backyard barbecue, just, you know, something that very common. It's the middle of the day. And it was really important for me to have that character, once he has this sort of seminal event, finding his friend, walk through this a long house, you know, a big sort of a journey to the front door of that house with hopefully us as the audience watching and wondering, what's he going to say? Who's he going to tell? What's he going to do about it? And as I say, it's the key to the casting, because I needed an actor who could sustain, you know, 40 seconds or something, you know, a really significant shot and sustain the suspense of what is he going to do about it. And he gets to the front door and the boy's mother says, "Goodbye, Dean." And he turns around, and in that moment he makes his decision not to say anything, or maybe he doesn't know what to say, or maybe there's too much to say. Maybe all of that. So he just says he says goodbye, and he walks out. And that scene for me sort of raises the question that the movie tries to answer, which is what's going on with this main character, and what's going on in suburbia that leads to something like that, and what are the consequences, and how do we deal with it?
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Ari Paulson, the director of Chum Scrubber. Explain the title for the audience too, by the way.
You know, when you're a teenager and you live in suburbia, you walk into your friends' houses, and I think particularly teenagers are even more sensitive than adults to this, and you feel those secrets. There's a secret in every house, and it's either, you know, crime or drug abuse or an affair or some kind of pain. It's something that people aren't talking about, and we had this crazy idea. Well, let's make a movie about all those things that people aren't talking about, all those things that we choose to ignore or oppress or deny. There's no word for all of those things. You know, that was really the starting point. What do you call that? And we thought, well, let's make up a word, you know? Let's just – and it kind of gives you a sense, because the movie is a little bit different stylistically than sort of most mainstream movies. So it also kind of signals you that you're going to see something a little bit different maybe. And then beyond that, we have this cultural icon in our movie, this cartoon character who's ubiquitous. And he's in comic books and he's in video games, and he has his own TV show. He's called the Chum Scrubber. He's a sort of a post-apocalyptic teenage survivor.
And also kind of a raging id too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so all of those themes kind of intersect, and we thought, well, we'll make up this word. We'll give it to this pop icon in our world. And also kind of give you a sense of the movie, something unusual.
And talk a little bit about the cast, too, because it's an extraordinary group of actors you've got. For you talk about, obviously, Jemmy Bell, who most people know from a very different movie, Billy Elliot, when he's a much different person, so much smaller. And he's really – it's interesting the way he uses his eyes in the movie to sort of close himself off from people.
He's a remarkable actor. He his incredible gift that he's able to do – which was so, you know, the movie, you know, in a certain way rests on his shoulders because he, the movie poses the question, what's going on with this character after he finds his friend? What's happening inside him? And yet the story is that he shows nothing on the surface. And that's really the challenge for the actor, that he has to show nothing and show everything on his face all at the same time and constantly.
And that scene I was talking about, for me, that scene is sort of critical because we see in his eyes, him wrestling with what to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
exactly.
There's a lot going on around him. I just thought that was probably fundamentally why you wanted him, because he was so
Absolutely.
Expressive with that face.
Absolutely. And that, you know, the choice to shoot that scene in one uninterrupted shot was early on the big, you know, it's that's the question mark, you know. And I just thought we can't interrupt it, and we can't leave his face, because we have to see what's going on there, and there has to be something going on. But apart from him, you know, the rest of the kids cast, you know, I'm incredibly proud of all of them. They're just, you know, they've all gone on and since we shot the movie to have sort of explosive careers. Justin Chatwin plays Billy. He was in War of the Worlds, playing Tom Cruise's son. Camila Bell just shot When a Stranger Calls. Lou Taylor Pucci, who was in Thumbsucker and won a bunch of acting awards for that role, and is an amazing young actor. Thomas Curtis comes out, I think, this month in North Country. He plays Charlize Theron's son. So literally that the entire cast is sort of this, you know, kind of next generation.
And Camilla, you found her very early, didn't you?
But she walked in. I mean, we had a day of actresses coming in and reading for the role. It was just that, you know, that story that, you know, I would have wanted to make up if it wasn't real, which was literally she walked in the room and she was that character. She was Crystal. Because what I typically would do is with the actors, they would come in and they would perform the scene, and then I would, you know, give some kind of adjustment to see, you know, what the rapport was and whether they could do that and do something different than they planned. And with her, when she came in and she read for the part, I had nothing to say. And after she walked out, one of the producers, Bonnie Curtis, turned to me and who'd been sitting next to me for a couple of weeks doing this. And she said, don't you want to tell her to do something to it differently? And I said, no, I can't improve on that. That was her.
And like Jamie, she becomes a real object of audience, not sympathy, but empathy. I mean, really, they become connecting points into the movies for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And was that in your conception, or did it start to happen more after you found the actors for it?
No, I mean, you know, this is one of those movies where there's so much going on that the casting was critical. We spent, I don't think I'm overstating if I say I've met every young actor between the age of, say, 17 and 20 who's working in Hollywood. I met hundreds. And not just reading them. I mean, I met with them. I had coffee with them to get to know them a little bit and get a sense of really who they are as people, because these are really complex roles. They're complex roles for you know, established, experienced actors. But when you set as yourself sort of a goal, I want real teenagers playing teenagers in this movie, the bar is even higher. You know, you have to find actors who can do two things at once, even if they're opposites.
We're talking to the director, Ari Poz, and his film is Chum Scrubbers, The Treatment. It's such a different take on teenage life. I mean, because it does move back and forth between sort of an abstract world and a real world that's actually kind of abstract because people aren't talking about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's more in the real way, more kind of honest confrontation in the video cartoon world,
mm-hmm.
and more directness there than there is in the real world of all these flesh and blood people who kind of move like in some way like caricatures of themselves, especially the adults. And I really wonder for you what that's like when people see that, because there's so many ideas going on in the movie. Did you want them to sort of feel that first, or sort of feel a movie as drama first? Because it does work on both an archetypal and a dramatic level.
There's this great quote that Billy Wilder has, which is, every great movie has a tiny bitter pill that you want the audience to swallow. But to get them to swallow it, you coat it in layers and layers of sugar. And the sugar is humor and plot twists and character, you know, interesting characters and visuals and music and all of those things. But at the core of it, you hope that there's something, too, that, you know, that they can – that an audience can take from it. So I hope that it works on both levels. That's sort of the intention, to make a movie that works as drama or as humor, depending on, I suppose, your point of view and whether you're a teenager or adult as well. We've shown the movie to groups of teenagers and adults. In one particular case, we showed it to a group of teenagers and their parents in two separate theaters and then brought them together to talk about it and found that they had both seen very different movies. The teenagers had seen a serious drama about their lives and some of the issues that they're wrestling with, prescription drug abuse or suicide or a disconnect, feeling a disconnection from their parents. And the adults had seen – their parents had seen a comedy, you know, about life in suburbia and a satiric look at it, you know. And it's great to see – I'm going on a tangent, but it was fascinating to see this sort of completely divergent views on the movie, and you get them together and they say, you know, oh, that was really funny and exaggerated, the parents say, and the kids look at them and say, what are you talking about? That was real.
I was really fascinated to see how it moves kids emotionally, that they react to the narrative.
Yeah.
And then the ideas sort of come at them secondly.
Yeah.
And I guess for adults, it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. I think the kids see a reflection of their lives. You know, they see the particularly the teen characters in the movie wrestling with issues that they're wrestling with themselves, and that's really the focus. Maybe the parents are reacting first to the tone. There's also that danger if you know, when you have both parents working and you know that there's a disconnect, a gulf between you and your kids, maybe it's hard to watch a movie that looks at that, you know?
It's really a movie that uses movies in lots of ways. And I know I've talked to you about this, that you're really a student of film, and the points of reference in this movie range from Truffaut to Tarkovsky to Billy Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to get that much stuff into a movie, what do you decide that you want to do, and how much of it is stuff that you sort of set out for yourself before you start to work, and how much of it are things that you include as you're working?
Well, you know, I grew up – my parents are Russian, and my dad was a filmmaker in Russia. And the Russians, whatever they do, they take very, very seriously. And in my case with film, it was something that we talked about all the time that was kind of central to my growing up, my experience growing up. And, you know, they felt so strongly about it. For instance, we never had television growing up in our house.
And talk about the kind of movies you went to see as a kid. I mean, you saw some amazing stuff.
Well, yeah, it was – you know, I had a kind of double life because during the week I would go to the movies with my friends and we would see everything you would think of, Raiders of the Lost Ark to, you know, Jurassic Park and Star Wars and, you know, Forrest Gump and all those things that everyone was seeing. But then on the weekends we would, you know, we would go to the Russian Film Festival or the Italian Neorealists or Truffaut. And we always had – our house was kind of a meeting point for a lot of dissident Russian, sort of the intelligentsia, you know, whether they were writers or comedians or musicians. So we kind of had this great circus moving through our living room all the time, kind of made for a fascinating and rich childhood, you know, for me.
Well, we should take a break and talk about more of these ideas. My guest is director Ari Posen. His movie is Chum Scrubber. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is director Ari Posen. His film is Chum Scrubber. The movie really kind of mocks the American sterility, which is to sort of say everything is what it is on the surface,
right,
which is what these adults are clinging to so tenaciously, partially because it feels like they don't want to admit that there's anything more than what's right in front of them.
Mm. Absolutely. That's exactly it. And there's also that, you know, I think it's easier to look at the world satirically if you're not entirely a part of it. You know, it's that sort of, you know, as an immigrant, you're able, I remember looking at the world and it's, you know, I'm only in it knee deep, you know, so I kind of have I can kind of look at it with a smile. You know, the main thing for me, my parents used to call television junk images, you know. They didn't want us watching, particularly my dad, because it was like junk food, you know. It's like you can eat junk food, but it's better to have a proper meal. And it was the same thing with images. And so he really felt if you're going to go see images, you should see a movie, and you should see a movie from a master, because then each image has power. And so, you know, in answer to your question about how much of that is in the movie, for me it was – you know, what we would always talk about is what is the point that the filmmaker is trying to make, and why is the camera where it is, and why is the color of the wall the color it is, and why is the set designed the way it is. And all those, there are all these small details, thousands of them, that go into the making of a movie that you can either choose to engage, you know, what color wall helps me tell the story or makes the point of the scene. Or you could ignore the question, you know. So for me, all of the movies that you're talking about and all those directors' influences, the big thing for me was to try and force myself to ask those questions ahead of time on every scene, on every moment. What am I saying here? Why is the scene important? Why is it in the movie? Why is the camera here? Why isn't it over there? You know, and then you
get – Was that a tough question to answer?
Absolutely, because – you know, because with so many things, it's so easy to say it doesn't matter. But, you know, it does matter. And you have to believe it does. And I do, because Roman Polanski has this great quote, which I love, which is, when you go see a movie, what you're seeing is a window into the director's soul. And that's the result of all these thousands of decisions that you make. And so I think they're all important. They all resonate, you know, and an audience can feel them. You can feel when there's a hand behind the creative choices, you know?
It's The Treatment, I guess, as director Ari Posen. His film is Chum Scrubber. I guess I'm asking you about those references because the directors whose influence I see on the film, mm-hmm, are directors who tend to be kind of deliberate, who, mm-hmm, aren't about velocity at all.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that the frame is often teeming with activity, it's still not speedy at all. I mean, mm-hmm, you want to give us the chance to sort of drink everything in. And there's enough going on that we can choose what we want to pay attention to, what we want to maybe not sort of take in immediately, but we'll catch up with us later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I kind of got from it, that you were – even though there's a lot happening in it and it sort of seems on the surface kind of speedy, it really is not.
Well, I love those movies that you go see a second or a third time and you see something else. You know, you're looking in the other side of the other half of the frame that, you know, where you weren't focused on last time, and you know, or you notice a detail, you know. And the biggest compliment for me that you know, as the movie has sort of made its way through some of the festivals and people have seen it, is when they see it a second or a third time and they say, you know, I saw a completely different movie. And I think that, you know, for me, it's there's always it's sort of a play in contrast, and I'm trying to do as much as I can in every frame, in every shot, to communicate different things. So I hope that there is something more there, and if you see it more than once, you start to find it. You know, some people have talked to us about how, you know, we have this animated world, this cartoon in the middle of the movie, that is meant to be kind of a the flip side of, you know, we're showing this sort of hyper-real suburbia, and then there's a cartoon suburbia, post-apocalyptic. But, of course, the entire landscape of that cartoon is based on where we shot. and it's the same locations, just post-apocalyptic. And even the voices in the cartoon or the video game are voices from our movie that are coming later. So there's sort of, you know, you try and layer in as much as you can. And those movies that I love, they reward you when you come back to them and you start looking through them and you see, oh, there's a lot that went into this, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. And I guess I'm asking you these questions because it seems to me that because it really is two different movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you're talking about kids seeing one thing and an adult seeing another. And if you feel like the fact that it can be almost two discrete experiences for people, if you're wondering where the sort of the point of integration is for the two, I mean, where the movies come together.
That's an interesting question.
Because they're very separate emotional narratives.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't set out to make, you know, I didn't set out with that in mind. Like, let me.
Really?
Yeah, to create two distinct experiences, I didn't expect that adults and teens would experience the movie in such radically different ways. I think if I had to really, and I haven't thought about it much, but if I, you know, just now in trying to answer your question, I think that maybe a part of it is that I don't think it's my job to say this is good and this is bad, you know. So there's definitely a larger point of view to the movie, which is specific and distinct. But then, you know, deeper in, I try not to judge. You know, we try and make the parent, you know, all the parents in the movie, despite the disconnect they may have with their kids, are all trying to be good parents. They're not villains, and I'm not interested in painting them as villains. You know, they're all trying to be good parents.
But they're really not even listening to each other, the parents.
Right.
I mean, let alone their kids.
Yeah. Well, but it's hard, and you see that kind of thing all the time, every day. You know, the Glenn Close character, for instance, whose son commits suicide, you know, it goes around and saying to her neighbors, in no way whatsoever do I blame you for Troy's death, for the death of her son. I mean, you see that kind of behavior every day where people not only don't say what they're really thinking, but in fact say the opposite. And by saying the opposite, you know, they're saying exactly what they mean, you know. And that's interesting to me. But I suppose if you just take it on the surface level, then you hear something else. You know, you hear the opposite. You hear exactly what it's not. And in trying to do that throughout the entire movie, I guess it's natural that there would be two ways to take it in.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to director Ari Post, and this film is Chum Scrubber. Because I guess I just wondered, I'm asking you this, because if in the script stage it was conceived as sort of you wanted to sort of communicate one kind of experience and another initially, or if you just started to work on it and then it became this thing that it finally is.
I think for us, the root of it was to sort of make a protest movie and say there are all these things going on in this seemingly idyllic place that the people aren't talking about. And by not talking about them, there are consequences and all kinds of consequences on various levels. The most significant of which is suicide, which is there's a statistic that there's a teenager who commits suicide every 2 hours in this country. So that's really what we tried to do. But at the same time, we tried to temper it and say, because the fact is, I don't know why. I don't know the answer, you know. And at the end of the movie, you know, the movie poses this question: what happened to Troy? Why did he do it? What was the cause of it? And ultimately, I don't know what the answer is, and I don't think I should pretend to know. And all we're able to do at the end of the movie, in regards to that, is to answer the question whether it's worth caring about your friends or your neighbors, and whether there's a way to engage emotionally, or whether numbness is the only way to negotiate your way through this world.
When you were talking about, I guess, light before, one of the things that strikes me about the movie is there's so much misery that sort of takes place in these really brightly lighted spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a movie that's very much a movie of contrasts.
Yeah.
And about the ambiguity that kind of grows out of those contrasts.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, too, if that's something that you start to find as you were making the movie, if you knew that from the outset that you wanted to do that and have the characters inhabit space in that way.
No, I wanted that from the very beginning because I think there's a great tension in that, you know. That's exactly the thing with suburbia. It's a beautiful place. How do all these things happen in a place that seems so perfect? And you know, the other question in the movie with the Ralph Fiennes character that it's asking is, okay, if you accept that this place has this monotonous kind of repetitive color pattern and shapes and everything's the same and every house is the same and every street looks the same and, you know, everybody has the same smile painted on their faces and everyone's got the same perfect, beautiful life and nothing bad ever happens. It's the safest place on earth. Even despite all of that, it can be a place of great inspiration, a place of great beauty. And that's the Ralph Fiennes character. And so what you're saying is something that as a filmmaker is the most interesting thing to me, which is the contrast, which is instead of a dark and spooky place, it's beautiful. The skies are blue. The grass is green. The birds are singing. And there's stuff happening that nobody wants to talk about.
Is that the scene I was talking about earlier where he walks out of the suicide into all this bright sunlight?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really kind of awesome and awkward thing to do.
Yeah, he doesn't walk out into
rain,
shadows
rain
and
anything like that.
Rain and exactly, lightning and danger. No, he walks out into paradise. So many movies I love do exactly that, you know. They toy with your expectations, you know, and the danger of that is that some people won't get it, you know, because they.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, it's possible that you look at that and you say, well, because it defies your expectations, I'm not giving you the signs that you may be used to getting from other movies. You know, this is meant to be a very moody scene. So here's shadow. So I go the other way. It's bright. It's perfect. It's look at the flowers, you know, and the skies, and everything is great. And you have to kind of find your way through it. And I think in defying expectations, you're not fulfilling expectations, you know.
Because this is a movie that sort of starts off and observes conventions in some ways. You clearly you're really tickled with the idea. You're sort of like turning all that stuff on its head, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. What's the point of going to movies if you're not going to be surprised?
It's just so packed with things.
Yeah.
And when you said people not getting it, I wonder if it's people kind of fighting it.
Yeah.
Because it's ostensibly about these conventions, but it thwarts all our expectations about those what lie in those conventions.
It's strange. I set out to kind of make a little bit a different movie, and by making something different, it doesn't fit neatly into a box, and we're very proud of it.
Well, you should be. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you.
My guest is Ari Posen. His movie is Chumscrubber. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Our technical director in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Mary Holdridge produces the program. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Treatment. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Business, a look deep inside the business of entertainment with Hollywood's top dealmakers, filmmakers, moguls, artists, and agents. Hosted by Claude Brodesser. Check out the podcast of The Business at kcrw.com.